Hey, we're back. It's the steering committee. A very special episode. Not in that way, but special in that the guest that we'd actually originally recorded with a couple weeks ago is back. Are we telling your name? I can't remember.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, we can use your last name. Okay, all right. Yeah. Okay, our RJ Munt is with us tonight, and So I went to college with RJ years ago in Chicago, and both sort of studied the same thing, worked in the same industry for a long time, and then more recently, RJ has landed a job in the automotive industry. So very cool. So I'm going to come back to that, and I want you to properly introduce yourself and all that, but I have to rant, you know, like I was telling you guys before we got on here, I've got to grind my gears for a minute. Well, that's from Family Guy, right? That he does the grind.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is grinds my gears.
That was like Peter's little opinionated show that he
does. That's right. That's right. So I gotta tell you, you know, so, and I'm not going to talk about GT4s tonight, so I can at least talk about tires.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll get there, right?
Yeah, I'm still young.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So. I think of how quickly I run through tires on the Cayman, and you know, at 18,000 miles, it was time for its third set. And I used a service, a firm here in town. I won't mention names.
Not till they
pay for it. You know, my lawyer says, yeah, right. And this was a service. They, you go to their website. It's basically a service that they come to you, right? So. They claim to specialize in high-end cars. They've slapped the PCA, the Porsche Club of America logo on their website, the SCCA website. I actually encountered one of the owners of the firm on a car rally here, and they were putting, you know, new Cup 2s on GT3 RSs on the track while we were there, and was pretty impressed with the setup. They've got a Hunter Road Force balancer in the back of their vans. Well, anyway, fast forward a couple of years, they've got this whole fleet, business is good, and when it was time for me to get new Michelin Pilot Sport, the P4Ss, I guess, or 4Ss, I decided to roll the dice, and every time I roll the dice, I seem to roll snake eyes with this stuff. But they quoted a price which was cheaper than the dealer. Basically, I was getting, you know, installation and all that for the cost of the tires. It meant I didn't have to get in the car and drive down to Colorado Springs. You know, it felt like the right thing. Well, the guy comes out, puts the tires on. Everything seemed fine. Kind of rushed. The guy was personable. The guy left, decided to look a little closer, and there were a whole number of things that that were done wrong. And so I've got silver. The first thing I noticed, I have silver wheels, right? So you put silver wheel weights on silver wheels, right? You don't put some wheel weights that are black, some that are silver, and some that are beige, do you? And by the way, I don't know why there are beige wheel weights, because I've never seen any beige wheels. What, you know, Porsche, you know, fussy Porsche guys are. In fact, the center cap is supposed to be aligned, I believe, pointed toward the stem, right? The valve. I don't know. I think that's what it is. Anyway, of course, they were every which way. One of the wheel caps wasn't even put on right. It was half falling off. The guy had put race tape, which he asked if I was cool with that. But he put race tape on the wheels to cover up the wheel weights. And I thought it was because he thought I was going to be out on the track and all that. Well, I realized he did that in race tape is so the wheel weights don't fly off when you're on the track. I realized that he did that just because he wanted to cover up all the mismatched wheel weights, right? Just a number of things. He didn't clean the wheel barrels of the wheel before he put the weights on, so one of them fell off right away. It was just one thing after another. And when he pulled away where the truck was parked, there was a wheel cap a wheel weight, a cap from a bottle of something, and a cell phone repair receipt in my driveway. I mean, it's just carelessness, just sloppiness. And it wouldn't have been a big deal, but I called. And here's the thing. The wheels are perfectly balanced. So you get in the car, and it drives great. It's just, you know, when you have a Porsche or whatever, you kind of expect a certain level of service, right? And this is a company that caters supposedly to nice cars. And I'm sure that they deal with owners much more fussy than me. I mean, wait till they meet a Ferrari guy, right? And so I called the owner, and he was very nice. And he said, you know, obviously that's not right. We'll take care of it. And I said, you know, I said, no, nah, don't even worry about it. Whatever. It's not a big deal. I'll just have it. You know, the car drives fine. It's just, it's just detail stuff, right? I'll have it taken care of when I take the car into the dealer for an oil change. And so I, but by the time the call was over, I'd agreed to basically said, well, no, we'll come out and we'll make it good. I'm glad you called us. And the whole time I said, hey, I don't want to throw the guy under the bus. Oh, by the way, he said this was a new guy and I was his first stop. So they send me the new guy to experiment on, right? Which didn't help. So anyway, I agreed to have the guy come.
They saw that you had the base came and they figured.
That's right. You know, yeah, me and the rest of the pores. Yeah. And so the guy, we had a meeting or an appointment today scheduled for 1 p.m. We were out with the family up in the mountains, rushed back to make sure we'd be home on time, on time and all that. The guy rolls up at 1:25. So it's 25 minutes late, right? No call, no nothing. He rolls up in the van. Same guy that messed it up the first time. I couldn't believe it. Are you kidding me? And I was just fit to be tied. And so I went out and, you know, he couldn't really hear me over the booming sound system that they apparently have in their fleet vans. I basically just said, hey, you know what? Don't even worry about it. Have a good day. You know, first thing he said was not, hey, I'm sorry I screwed it up. It was my first day. What can we do to make this right? It was, I heard I did something wrong. So I wasn't sure if he hadn't been brought up to speed on my complaints or if he was just sort of being a jerk, but I sent him on his way. Of course, now, you know, he knows where I live, right? He's been here twice. If I wake up in the morning and the house has been egged, I know who did it. But it just, I couldn't get over it. So I guess my question to you here, fellow panel members, yeah, is I have this whole letter written to the owner of the company, right? Basically, yeah, just saying, hey, you know, you're probably wondering why I sent this guy home, you know, and I listed the reasons why I, you know, complained the first time. And there were, you know, seven different things here that it just, and the best part was I paid an extra $15. I don't know if it was in total or per wheel to have the tires filled with nitrogen, right? Extra $15. And I get in the car and there's a sticker in the car, or you could look this up online. It says the front tires should be set to 29 PSI, the rear tires to 30. I get on one of the tires is set at 24 PSI. The other front tire is at 32. And in the back, we've got one at 25 and one at 29. I mean, it's like, we're not even trying, right? It's basic stuff, right? So I wrote and I basically said, hey, you know, I'm part of the enthusiast community. I'm not going to throw you under the bus. I'm not going to give you any poor reviews. I'm not going to dissuade anyone from using you. You know, I know this was one installer. You have many, but, you know, I can't. I know I'm not the fussiest guy out there. And I just want you to know why I'm taking my business elsewhere. So I don't know. I just had the vent. You can't win, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, and it doesn't matter if you have a Porsche or a Honda or a Hyundai or what, you know, or an old beater or whatever. I mean, these are just things. Oh, and here's the best part. I realized that the guy didn't even replace the valves and stems. He reused the old ones, which means now the tires aren't even holding pressure. Every time I drive the car, I've got to add air. You know, I mean, basic stuff. Mm-hmm. You it's that phrase, you have one job, right? You know, and you didn't even get that right, you know. And then the owner didn't come out himself or send someone else, a trusted person, that he sent out the same guy. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, all right. So are you?
And that's what grinds my gears.
That's what grinds your gears this week. So, do you want to put to the committee whether you think you acted appropriately? Is that sort of your?
Yeah. Am I crazy? I know I'm a little crazy, but I mean, am I?
No. Well, okay. I'll give my quick take, and then RJ jump in if you want. I think no. I don't think you're acting crazy. I think I think if you're gonna develop a business that's catering towards sort of high end cars, like you said, it doesn't matter if you have a Honda or a Hyundai or whatever. But you know, I think the point is that like it definitely matters to some people, and you shouldn't be doing sloppy work on anyone's car.
Sure.
You know what I mean, the thing is, the guy who just, you know, doesn't care about this stuff and was just looking for convenience would have never checked for those, you know, five things that you did. Mm-hmm. But you know, if it's a Porsche and you're like, this is a car I drive fast in the mountains, this all needs.
Well, there's
to
a safety issue. Yeah.
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 So, yeah. You know, yeah, I mean, hopefully nothing there is, you know, done terribly, but I guess I can also understand if this guy's got like an expanding business and he just, you know, just grew too quickly. Those things can sometimes get out of your control, but his opportunity to win you back was by sending out, you know, his best guy or himself personally.
Right. Right.
And just crossing every T and dotting every I at that point. So, you know, it's, you know, I think he you gave him the fair shot, and I think that's appropriate. The way you handled it was appropriate. So
do I send this letter or do I just let it go? I mean, this is a company that the vans carry around Porsche center lock.
Here's the thing I would say. I would say send it. I worked in customer service for a long time, and the only way a culture can change is if they know something's wrong and they.
Right.
I mean, he knows something's wrong because the guy's going to tell him, "Oh, he just sent me on my way."
Right.
You give him specifics. He may not do anything with it, but at least he has the opportunity to. So,
what about my personal safety here? The guy knows where I live. Where do I just, like, you know, move on to the next battle? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. We'll get to that. But RJ, what do you think?
Yeah, not from the international perspective.
Yeah.
That wouldn't happen in Japan, would it, RJ? It wouldn't happen in Tokyo.
You'd probably be, I would be surprised, but it has happened. And I've definitely had these kind of, gear grinding, experiences with other things that I've ranted. And I had something and it'll come back to me, but just within the last week or two, that similar thing where I said,
damn it,
this doesn't happen in Japan. You know,
I'm surprised to hear that.
No, there was something else. It'll come back to me, but, I think send the letter. I think it sounds like, from what you explained, that it's written professionally. You're not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but you're just concerned because he's running a business and you expect a certain level of expectation, quality and the safety thing is for yourself when you're driving the car. I tend not to, maybe because I live in a very, very safe country, but the fact that he knows where you live, I'm less concerned about.
See, that's their secret. They come to you, all right.
That's true. But I think send it. It sounds like if you kind of build a rapport with this with the owner, at least.
Yeah.
I think it's just I think.
And here's the thing. No, I appreciate that. I should remind him this is in fact punishable by death in Japan. This is a guy, it's, you know, Denver's not Chicago or New York or Tokyo. I mean, you see the same cars, you know, it's a relatively tight, enthusiast community. I mean, I'll run into this guy again. I know I will, you know, I will say I almost played the, automotive podcast card guys. I almost said, you know,
do you know who I am?
You're right. Right. And then he'd say no. And
one of the top 100 podcasts.
Yes. Yes. What do you mean you haven't heard of us, right? Anyway, well, I'll save that for another day, right? But no, I appreciate your perspective. This is fresh on my mind. This, you know, just happened.
I do have a follow up question. Since we're kind of diving into this.
Yeah.
I feel even stupid asking this. So I know cars have like wheel weights on them, but when you get your tires changed, do they have to add and subtract them, or do they have to,
just
to keep the same ones that are on there from before? So.
Well, I mean, I guess you could keep the same ones. It's more about the adhesive, right? I mean, they rebalance the wheel and tire every time the new tire is put on.
They take off what's there.
Exactly. Exactly.
They need for that moment.
Right. Right. Yeah. They do seem to fall into similar place usually, but, you know, it's all about aligning the low point or the heavy point of the wheel with the light point in the tire. I mean, these are obviously not technical terms. And honestly, it's not something I used to think much about either until I had a couple really bad experiences where I took cars in and, you know, they lifted it not on the lift points under the car, or, you know, they screwed up the finish of the wheel or whatever. Now it's all I can think about, apparently. But so it's something they've got to do each time. They didn't remove the gunk from the old wheel wells, or the old wheel weights, which I just thought it was something that most places did. Anyway, just sloppy stuff. And you know, as someone who works in business, I mean, maybe I'm a really tough boss and I've never realized it, but I you know, expect excellence, right? And you know, especially when you're paying $1,400-$1,500 for some tires, it's Anyway,
no, wait
till I get that GT4. See, I got it in. Anyway, that's I've done my talking for the night.
Yeah, those playing the steering committee drinking game. We've mentioned GT4, so go ahead.
drink.
Yeah. So. We'll save the update for next week. The ongoing GT4/86 chronicles. But
yeah, no, I'm just as bad. You at least talk about a car that you own. I talk about a car I don't own yet. I mean, I guess you, yeah. So I dream after my my reasonably priced affordable sports car, like it's a Ferrari.
it's a great car. It's you know, I can't wait for you to get one. So you know,
I can't wait. I'm pretty excited.
Soon. So yeah. We should actually get to the man of the moment here, RJ. So I'll give you a little bit of an intro. So again, RJ and I went to college together many, many years ago. Always, you know, both always had an interest in cars. You know, and when we recorded this first time, RJ told us this really cool story of sort of when he was sort of how his, what do you want to call it, automotive journey has come full circle. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, we should, I guess, let the audience know RJ is in Tokyo, in Japan. So it's 8 o'clock here and 8:30 here in Denver. It's what time there, RJ?
I think 11:30 in the morning.
11:30. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Cool. And,
a little too early for a drink.
Yeah. No, but you're getting there, right? So how'd you end up in, we should probably start with you. So you're American, you grew up in Iowa. You know, we ended up meeting, you know, again in college in Chicago many years later. But, you know, when we talked the last time, you talked about, you didn't really grow up with a lot of interesting cars, but you had them on your mind. And you told us the story of writing to car companies, right?
Yeah, if you could start there, maybe that was pretty cool.
Sure.
It was great to me. It sounded like a great taproot moment. So go.
Yeah. And then come back to where you ended up, which is.
Sure. So yeah, when I grew up, I grew up in a, you know, small middle class kind of town in Iowa, near the Mississippi River, and you know, it wasn't a, I guess that's kind of pickup truck and muscle car country. You know, it's and my father was big into cars, American cars. He loved Corvettes. Had a '62 Corvette back in the '70s, so he kind of planted that seed, I think. But he was always American car guy, and he could, you know, spot the cars on the street and on the road when they drive by, and he could tell you exactly the year of it and tell you why that's that year. You know, that's the year they changed the bumper, they changed the grill, and I was always kind of fascinated by that, and just you know, how does he know that? You know, and now obviously being 40 years old, and I tend to do the same thing with my wife, and maybe to drive her nuts a bit, you know. But for me, that passion came through to me, and I kind of took the avenue going down the European car route, and was anything European I just loved, back in I've pinpointed it to 1994 when I would have been 14 years old, 13 or 14. And this is kind of, you know, pre-internet, of course, and
which is crazy, right? I mean, this wasn't that long. I mean,
You
put pen to paper.
It's one of those things. You even though we've all lived pre-internet days, it still kind of baffles you. How do we do things back then?
How do we do anything?
Yeah.
How do we get to anywhere? I don't even know how we got directions.
Like, yeah, this is, you know, this is pre cell phones, at least for us. We didn't have cell phones till later, but I reached out to every single car manufacturer, at least everyone that was being sold in America. I think with the exception of the French companies, and I think maybe Morgan, or you know, some of the more
Doug was writing to those companies, so it's cool.
Yeah, don't worry. Yeah, my family was supporting those companies a lot.
So I reached out to every one of these companies, you know, whether it was all the European companies, Japanese, American, everybody, and through 800 numbers, I assume, and asked for them to send their brochures, their marketing material for their model range. So day after day, I would receive packages in the mail from various manufacturers, and I would start to collect all of these brochures and for everything. I started to collect the ones from the European makers, but I particularly reached out to Mercedes-Benz, and I was always in love with the cars. But for Mercedes, I actually wrote a letter, kind of fawning over the brand and saying how much I loved it. And one day I'll own one.
Let me stop you, RJ, if I could. So like when you were 14, that was what you said, 1994. Really sort of when the Mercedes was still a Mercedes, right? Like the upright hood ornament across the board, the vault, build quality, slab sides and MB techs and all that. Really, really. I think you too probably that really when a Mercedes was a Mercedes in your eyes, right? So I mean, there wasn't a Mercedes dealership in every town like there is now, right?
So that was the pinnacle of the Bruno Sacco era, the designer, the head of design there, when you're living in that era, you don't realize you're in that era until after the fact. But amazing build quality, you always hear the term over engineered. Referring to that era of Mercedes. So I wrote this letter. I typed it out, I think maybe even on a typewriter. And
much more romantic than an email.
Images of Jack Kerouac come to mind. I printed it out, signed it, and I attached a little school photo of myself with a paperclip, and I send it off to Montvale, New Jersey, where all of the companies were headquartered at the time.
You guys remember when they would test a Mercedes, and right, I think it was Porsche too, and maybe even BMW, right? They would always have jersey plates, right, in the magazines.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. A few weeks later, I received a goodie basket of everything that they had, all their marketing material, videos, posters. I remember I say posters because this was 1994 was the year that the C-Class was introduced and replaced the 190E.
Right.
So
yeah,
they in there was posters for the new C-Class. Oh wow! Starting at $29,995. I had the poster of the C-Class on my wall as a kid, and next to the Countach and the Testarossa and next to Michael Jordan, Nice. That's so that was my kind of love affair with the 94 range was just I thought it was just beautiful. So
that must have rocked your world. Coming, you hopped off the school bus and you did. I don't know. Well, you walked 12 miles home from school.
It's still exciting to get mail right now that's not junk mail.
After you wipe it down, this is very exciting. Yeah.
And I asked my mom, and I've moved country. I've moved to a number of cities. And as we all do, we probably have boxes of stuff at our parents' house from our childhood. And through the years, your parents say, I've got to get rid of that stuff. Got to get rid of it. And somewhere along the lines, she threw it out. And I asked her just recently, I said, do you have that box of stuff? I don't really care about the Mitsubishi or the Dodge or Plymouth brochures for the latest the Caravan or Gallant.
Gallant was the VR4. Hey, get out of town.
I said if you have that Mercedes one, that was very really special. If you have that, she looked and darn it, she doesn't have it. But anyway, the still the same kind of the same excitement that I had for it back then, I still have for that era. Yeah. And anytime I see anything from that era, it always turns my head,
Oh yeah, I get more excited about seeing a Mercedes from that era just driving around, than I do some of the more exotic stuff. I really do. It's just, represents so much,
Yeah, yeah. I think you probably feel the same way. But when you obviously new cars, whether it's Mercedes, BMW, Porsche, anything. That you see somebody driving a brand new car these days, they could just be a person who's just buying it. They have a commuter car. That's just their thing. But if somebody's driving a car from the 90s era of that, that maker, the 80s or something older, they know what they're driving. And those are people. When I see an old Saab, which are very rare in Japan.
Yeah, and they're getting pretty rare here too, RJ. Honestly,
I want to talk to that guy because he knows what he's driving. He knows what he's driving. Yeah. So yeah, that's what. When I see one of those on the street, it's
there's a guy, the parent at my daughter's school, who has two different like late '90s Audis that are both perfectly in condition, and one's a. Do they have an A6 in the early 90s or mid 90s? I can't remember.
They did. It was still boxy.
One's like a boxy station wagon, white, and it's beautiful. Huh. And then he's got like a similar vintage A8, I didn't even know it was in the United States at that point. Huh. But yeah, you know, RJ, you're absolutely right. Cause like there's much nicer cars at the school, newer. And I half the time don't want to, you know, I really don't want to talk to those people, but I want to go find out why that guy is driving that car.
Well, cause
that,
right.
You know, that's a deliberate choice. And there's something there. So
probably even a more difficult choice. I mean, I can't imagine that an Audi from that era is any easier to maintain than a Mercedes. But
but you know, it's like, that's the thing.
That's a real commitment.
Yeah, I think it's I think that's why it's interesting because it's definitely, you know, it's definitely a commitment and a specific choice that they're making. So.
And even back then, you know, I mean, that was a real statement piece, you know, I mean, that was, you know, if you sought out a car like that, I mean, again, this was before there was a Mercedes dealership in you know, every city or whatever. I mean, that was really a status thing. And you didn't fall into a Mercedes, right? I mean, it's just, you know, that wasn't until a few years later. And
like
special Mercedes then.
It makes me wonder, for example, RJ, have you ever stopped to like try and figure this out? Like so you grew up in Iowa, like was there a Mercedes-Benz dealership in Iowa in 1994?
Probably. There was one in Davenport. So I grew up about 10, 20 minute drive outside of Davenport, Iowa in the Quad Cities. Okay. And there was a Mercedes dealership. It was together with Porsche in Davenport. But there weren't very many around. And in my small town, the only one that was there was the optometrist. He drove a 190E. That was the baby Benz at the time.
Yeah.
For me, it didn't matter. And the other, speaking of the 190E, so that same year, in 1994, when I got the letter in the package from Mercedes, when my birthday came around, I told my mom, I said, look, I don't want the whatever the latest video game is or whatever toy that, you know, we've all forgotten about at this point. I want to go test drive a Mercedes. And so sure enough, and I think kind of serendipitously, my mom's partner happened to meet just a day or two before that, a guy who worked at the dealership. And he said, come on down. We'll, you know, and so we went down there at night, you know, just before closing time, about, you know, eight o'clock or so. And we said, here's the car. We'll take this out for a drive. And he let us, you know, he didn't come with us, but we piled in. It was a 190E. Navy blue.
Nice.
And I remember still to this day, as a 14-year-old kid, I was shaking nervous. It was, oh my God, it's Maria. Oh my God. You know, and it's, it was just showed how much I was passionate about that era and just, and how, what it meant as a kid, you know, and that's, it's cool to see, you know, and I'm sure, you know, the young kids these days are feel the same way when they see a certain car that they love. And it's the same things that excite me back then are still the things that, you know, excite me now. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
that's fantastic. And like you said, as far as a birthday present, you're right. It's like if you had asked for any of the standard stuff, who knows?
A Game Boy game or whatever was popular back then.
Yeah. It's like that present, which was a memory, has stuck with you this whole time, which is awesome. So that was well done. So
So obviously this has been this theme throughout your life here and car you've admired. And so tell us what you do now.
Yeah. So I work in the automotive industry. I work in commercial vehicles. For a Japanese manufacturer, German owned Japanese manufacturer here. I've always, obviously my passion for automotive is pretty obvious, but, I you know, along with Ryan, I worked in the graphic design, come from a graphic design background. But I always wanted to work in the automotive industry. I just didn't know kind of what jobs or what where I could fit in. But I was able to I have been working this job for about a year and a bit. And it just feels like home. I love it. To be able to talk about cars or trucks every day and to be in that world. I'm in the digital marketing department. So everything digital, web, social media, content creation, video creation, is what I do. And it's just, you know, to be able to see and watch what other companies are doing, is just amazing. You know, to know I get paid for this, to watch and to create this kind of content is really a dream come true.
Yeah. And you didn't end up in Japan because of this job. You've been in Japan for years. You went over to Japan to.
I went over to Japan with you.
That's right.
Yeah. 17 years ago, after just after college, college.
Yeah.
So I was living in New York. Ryan, you were still in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we had a buddy that lived over here from art school named Pete. And Ryan and I decided we're going to hop on a plane and fly over to Japan. It was my first time out of America.
Yeah.
And so I instantly kind of fell in love with it. And after the end of the week, Pete said to me, you can live here too. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Tell me more. So,
yeah. You took to it like white on rice, RJ.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Nice reference. I came over here. I taught English for about a year and a half before finding a job in design. And I was able to find a job in design, and I've been doing that ever since. It was 17 years ago. I've been here in Japan for almost 16 years.
Yeah.
So it feels like home. I'm married with a child now. So
yeah. We can't say who you work for.
I was just gonna let our audience know RJ knows who he works for.
But you can see where this is going. Right. Okay. So go ahead, Doug.
I was actually gonna just set up sort of this his history over there, and then this long, long-standing love for these Mercedes Benzes, and I thought maybe that was a good place to kind of, pause for a sec, and we can kind of hear sort of the next chapter of this love affair that's been going on this whole time.
So, take a quick break and come back.
I think it's good. I think it's been a good break. We've got good time here. So, all right, let's
don't go anywhere.
And we're back. We're talking with our friend RJ here, and he's been regaling us with his stories of love of his cars from a young age and the interesting step that he took to fulfill that. And we were learning about his long-standing love affair with Mercedes-Benz.
Did you fulfill it?
Well, I think that's where we're going to go here.
Okay.
So, RJ, you were saying you love in particular the 1994 Mercedes-Benz model lineup. So what have you purchased for yourself there?
I don't know what you guys have heard, but I don't know who's been talking to you guys, but
we have steering committee spies all over the world.
well played. So from that range, that era, the car that always stuck out to me was always the E-Class, but in particular the station wagon version from that era. I kind of know what it was. It was that rear facing jump seat. I think as a kid that I just thought was the coolest thing. I just always loved the station wagon. I know it's a weird dream car to have. It just over the years it kind of grew and in the status, and it just became my dream car. The images of or the dreams of having a Countach or a Testarossa or Viper or whatever, it kind of faded. Maybe because you think about the maintenance costs on that. Dreaming of having that, there was the W124 era, station wagon, and particularly the 1994 was the facelift, model, 94, 95 before they switched the body styles. So yeah, you know, I've always dreamed about it. Always, you know, told my wife that's my dream car. That's what I want. You know, that every time there's one that passes on the street, that's what I want. That's my dream car. So okay, yeah. Okay, someday. And then during this Corona and COVID situation and quarantine and kind of, I mean, I think we've all had a moment to reflect and see what's important and obviously we're trying to avoid maybe the trains here in Japan and large crowds of people you know, being stuck in a big city, you know, I do envy people in the countryside during this, these times. You're able to kind of get out and have some free, have a backyard and things. And wife and I were talking, maybe it's time to buy a car and be able to take a road trip or be able to go camping.
It's really all about the family, RJ, isn't it?
It is. It's a station wagon. So
he purchased the station wagon. He's
that's yeah. right. So, I mean, come
so,
on.
Yeah. So, yeah.
How can you argue against that? You know.
So. Yeah. So I always, you know, every once in a while I check the classifieds here for the used car sites and happened to, as I usually do, I look for the station wagon, the 94, 95, and I found one that popped up at a good price, and it was in. Well, actually, the one I found wasn't in good condition, as I found out. But they had another one, and that was the one. So we just recently the process started a while ago, but I just received it about two and a half weeks ago. So I'm the proud owner of a 94 E320 station wagon in wine red.
Nice. And it's beautiful. We did see some pictures. It's like
we did. Like I said, our spies had their cameras out. We saw some pictures.
Yeah.
We both, we definitely, steering committee approved, especially the color. I think the color
100%.
Was striking, so, yeah.
And you said the 94, 95 were unique in that it was a facelift, right? So is that the bigger headlights? What else? I just think you've got the Euro headlights. So your headlights are just different than ours.
The biggest thing that the way you'll be able to tell the 94, 95 is they have a kind of a recessed grill. So 93 and before, it's a piece that's on top, but the 94, 95 is recessed. So you'll notice that.
Interesting.
And then 96, they switched body styles with the round headlights, but
interesting.
But this one, you know, the price is right. The body is flawless. The interior is flawless. It's black wow. leather.
Oh, cool.
And right-hand drive. The one I originally found was left-hand drive. In Japan, they do both, but this one's right-hand drive, just flawless. It's really.
So I can't remember. Was it always a Japanese car, or was it from another right-hand drive?
No. This one was Japan. The left-hand drive one that I looked at was in green, which was kind of the color I wanted. That was kind of the one I saw in the catalog, you know, back, you know, 26 years ago, and that's the kind of one I fell in love with. This one, the interior showed every bit of 26 years. It was that Mercedes Tech fabric. It was kind of a vinyl, and you could tell that the person who had originally bought it, and they said it did come from North America.
Calling hamburgers it. And French fries and
there's a bit, yes.
and broken dreams.
It had seen better days, but everything inside was kind of loose or misaligned. Both the one I bought and this, the green one, both had about 100,000 miles, 160,000 kilometers. In the end, it was just the red one. My wife calls it pink.
That's what you want to hear. Yeah. It's not pink. I've seen it. It's a very masculine, deep red.
We've had it for, going on 3 weeks now, and it was quite a process, and I can go into that kind of the whole, process of how we got it and all the different steps. I haven't lived in America for 16 years. I haven't bought a car in the state. I've never bought a car in the state. So I had a hand-me-down in high school. So this was kind of my first time at the age of 40. But no, it drives fantastic. It's the surprising thing is that it's very heavy. As far as the gas, the accelerator is very, very heavy. The steering's heavy. For the first few times I drove it, it felt like a workout. Huh. It's not a big car. It's not, I don't know the dimensions, of the new ones, but it feels it's the same size as the C-Class, the modern day C-Class. So, it's not a big car, but it drives a bit heavy, but very, very, feels very solid and there's no creaks or, after 26 years.
Have you ever, prior to test driving? So you test drove the green one. I know that that's ahead of the red one, but were those the first two that you'd actually gotten a chance to drive?
That's a good question.
Had you ever driven that vintage Mercedes before?
No. I've been in them. Not in the E-Class from that era. Maybe not. I think I've been in a few 190Es, but never. I don't think so. No.
And you were telling us that in Japan you don't get to test drive the car, so you until you owned it, you hadn't driven it.
That's right. Yeah,
ride along. Oh, right.
I forgot you mentioned that. Yeah. So you didn't even drive the green one.
I'm glad you don't hate it.
Yeah. So yours is actually the first one you'd ever driven yourself.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So that's a funny thing. Yeah, I mentioned that. So on the website that I found it on, there was you schedule. It says test drive in Japanese, but I scheduled an appointment.
Lost in translation. It's a test drive.
It was. So I went to the dealer. It's in the city, and I show up there, and the car that I bought was very, very much on the low end of what they sell. There was a McLaren in there. There was a few Ferraris. There was an old 66, 67 Corvette. Hmm. In there, so they deal with definitely some high-end stuff. But they brought the car around, and then the guy hops in the driver's seat, and I'm like, okay, maybe he's gonna pull it out and get it in a place for me to jump in. No, he takes off. He's driving and telling me about the car and saying, here, this is accelerates good, steering great,
sure it does.
And I was like, okay, I guess I'm not going to drive it. I've heard about this, but I signed up for a test drive. He took me to a parking lot and then he said, well, we have, and I knew right away I was going to buy this green one. It wasn't worth it. And he said, well, we have the red one, and I knew about the red one. And he said, it's just right there. Like, so we went over and looked at it. Like, oh my God, this one is flawless. And had more options. Obviously these cars aren't the 94, they don't have the options that they have now in the tech, but it had the heated seats. It had the, real leather interior. It was in great condition. He drove me around in this one. And then I went home and I talked to the wife and said, the green one wasn't good, but this red one is, I think this is it. And,
at least that's what I heard. Yeah.
And then she, exactly. But, she hadn't seen it. She trusted me on that one. And God bless her for agreeing to buy a 26 year old, European car. That I haven't driven. But we got it. We negotiated a little bit. But then we pulled the trigger on it. Got a new set of tires on it. But the body is flawless. The only thing it needs is it needs some the rubber they call it the rubber boots on the side mirrors need to be replaced pretty hard. But other than that, there's not a scratch on it. So, But there's a number of steps and hoops to jump through in order to get it. One of the biggest things in Japan is you need to, at least in Tokyo, you need to prove that you have a place to park it before you actually take delivery. Before you're able to sign over the title, you need to be able to prove that you have a place to park it. And this involves the going down the police department, telling them that you, so in my building, there's a parking garage and it has the elevator lifts and kind of a conveyor belt for the cars. And we have to rent that and pay for it every month. And so we had to sign a contract with the housing company and go through that, which delays the process. But then you have to take that form down to the police department. You need to have a stamp, the red stamp, which I, for 15 years, have never had one. I've always been able to sign. But I had to have a stamp with my name on it made and delivered. Oh, wow. go down to the police station, wait for, you know, give them the form. That went fine. Wait three days, get that. They come and inspect the spot to make sure you have a spot. You draw a little map of where it is, and then wow. you give this and a couple other forms to the dealer, and then they take it down to the DMV and get the license plate put on it, and then they then deliver it to the house.
May I ask what a parking space goes for a month?
Well, yeah, we live just outside the city, just over the border. So we're actually technically in Kawasaki. Okay. But here in our building, we're paying about $200 per month for our spot, which is you know about what I'd expect here.
Yeah,
if you're in the city, you could, I mean, easily, of course, $300 would be
okay.
Maybe even more, depending on the location.
And this is not a garage either. This is an outdoor space that's sort of covered.
It's outdoors, but there's four levels of cars that are kind of a conveyor belt elevator.
Yeah.
So ours isn't on the top, so it's not exposed to the sun. It's on the third level, so there's another one underneath. So it doesn't get direct sunlight or direct rain. It's good. It's good in that regard.
Do you ever get hail in Tokyo?
It's rare. But,
yeah.
It's always very small, and it's nothing like the States. But so 3 weeks and it jumped through all those hoops. They finally delivered it and they pulled it up to the house and I jumped in it to park it, and I said, oh my God, this is heavy, you know, the steering's heavy.
I'd be disappointed if it wasn't.
It's
a real Mercedes. Yeah.
Well, you know, we've driven a few new Mercedes and a lot of new cars that we rent and the car share service that we have. And it's just a different era of car, you know, a very, very different era. We're used to driving we always would rent the Mazda CX-5 or the Toyota Harrier, which would be the Lexus RX America.
The Harrier is a much better name.
Yeah. So we're used to, you know, driving those and very easy to steer, easy to maneuver, but it's very different, but no, we love it. Absolutely love it.
And you said you were looking for some, maybe original literature, you know, contemporary to the car.
Yeah.
So if we have any listeners out there who maybe have an inside track that could maybe, track down some original, you know, brochures, pamphlets. You mentioned that and I had to laugh. It reminded me of the time. Sorry, I'm getting way off topic. But, you know, if I can pull out a story, I'm going to pull it out, right?
I was going to say, the audience doesn't really know it's us until we get way off track on
that. That's right. You know, and the more of these margaritas I drink, the further out I'm going to get. But many years ago, when I was still a single man before I met my wife, I was living in Chicago, and I met a young woman at a party, and she was Polish, and she's very attractive, and it came out that she had a really unique name, and it came out that she had been a model, you know, in Europe, and thought that was pretty cool. So of course, first thing I did after meeting her, I think I set up a date or whatever, went home. And first thing I did was, of course, tell my buddies, you know, I got a date with a model. And I Googled her because the Google was.
You mean you told everybody that would listen to you? Right?
Basically, shouted it from the rooftop.
I have a date with a model.
And I thought, well, she's probably just feeding me a line or something's lost in translation. And I looked her up, and sure enough, like, she came up all these different places. But the best return on Google was, it said she had been an issue of Polish Playboy, right? So I'm like, oh God, I got to see that. How do I get my hands on this copy of Polish Playboy? Then it was, I had a friend who had worked at Playboy, which was in Chicago at the time. And my friend Nadine, bless her heart, she reached out to someone who she still knew at Playboy. She had worked there for years. And they, in their archives, tracked down that month, you know, that issue of Polish Playboy from, you know, 5 years before, whatever, sent it to me at my office at work. I got it a couple days later. And I think I saw the mail person come, and I could see the thing go into my mailbox on my door, my office, and we're in an office. I just, like, I couldn't wait to go down and open, rip into that thing and see what this girl looked like. Right. And so I get down there.
And
if anyone walked in, you'd just be like, this is important research.
It's pretty research, right? Well, I open it up and I'm flipping through. And sure enough, there she was in a fashion spread, fully clothed.
I hope you didn't bring this up on your date.
I did not. And we're still friends on Facebook. I can't imagine she's listening, but we're probably
until she hears this.
Exactly. Yeah, you creep, you know. But I'd never been more disappointed in my life. But anyway, I guess my point is, if like in that situation, we have anyone who maybe has an inside track to old Mercedes publications and who'd be willing to send something RJ's way, please email us at our email address, and we'll connect you to, and hopefully you won't be as disappointed as I was that day. My non sequitur for the year.
The steering committee on Facebook, and we'll hook up.
Right.
Yeah. I've been looking on eBay and on Google for this, and the images that pop up of the pages, it still comes right back. I know exactly that. Okay, that's the brochure. I remember that from my childhood. Just trying to track the 94, 95 models down on the interwebs and see what I get.
We'll find it. Yeah. Everything's out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, don't wait too long. Before you know it, they're going to be on Bring a Trailer, and they're going to be like $1,200 each or something, the way things are going. So
That's true.
I know, right? Yeah, that's the whole automotive accessories category.
The luggage, the toolkits, just think what this Porsche fire extinguisher is going to go for in 30 years. We complain about them being $250 now, Doug.
Yeah.
I don't know if you probably haven't listened yet, RJ, but our last episode was we built out our dream GT4.
drink again, audience.
But we did go back and forth over the fire extinguisher. So
I haven't listened to the last one.
Okay, all right. Well,
yeah, it goes a little long, but it gets into the weeds.
Yeah, we go for like 2 hours.
If it's your thing, it definitely is. We fulfill people's details. Quota for that one. That was
importantly, it was recorded. So.
Yeah. That one actually, somehow that one, our great conversation before didn't survive, but that one, ready for consumption right away.
Back to the Mercedes.
Yeah.
So it was quite a process. So you have your own rubber stamp now with your name. Is it like in kanji then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did they give that?
I'd be stamping everything in front of me with that thing.
The thing with that, and it's not so you, it's one step after another, and so I go online, order it from the store online. They deliver it, then I have to take it down to the ward office, and then have it officially like notarized, I suppose. So it makes it official, makes it mine.
Okay, wow.
And then
that's as good as your signature. That stamp.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. But like I said before, you always have to, whether you're signing a lease for an apartment or even when I bought my motorbike, I just, instead of there's a place for you to stamp it. Mm-hmm. I've always, for 15 years been able to just sign over top of it, and it's been totally fine. But the dealer said, for bigger purchases, a house, a car, you need to have a stamp. So fine. 15 years later, I got one, but,
what does a stamp cost?
I was like, $50.
Okay. That's a lot for a rubber stamp.
Yeah. So I got that. It comes in a little case. And then I got my official, it's notarized. It's official, kind of thing. So yeah,
do you have to go and like stamp it like in front of a person though? Like, or can you stamp something and mail it in?
I had all these documents, and basically everywhere you put in your information, you have to stamp it. And if you make any corrections to it, you cross it, cross out the, you have to stamp that to say that you're the one that did it, but you don't have to do it in front of somebody, but you have to have the official, certificate from the ward office that says, this stamp is official.
So we can't complain about our bureaucracy at the DMV ever again.
Yeah. Well,
but I mean, just in general, that's interesting because that's kind of like a interesting way to kind of get around. Like, in my world, as an attorney, there's a lot of sometimes where you have to have clients come in and sign things in real life. Even in 2020, it's interesting. That's kind of an interesting way, kind of to officially have a signature done even remotely.
Well, the I mean, this, I guess for me, of course, I'm a foreigner in Japan. I have a foreign name. So there's nobody else in Japan with name Ryan Munt. But when it comes to somebody that's named Tanaka or Kobayashi or anybody with or Suzuki, if you can go down to the 100 yen store and buy a stamp off the rack for those people. So in that regard, yeah. You know, it's, well, there's many people. For me, it's unique.
Okay. But for a common name in Japan, that could be an issue though.
Never mind.
I retract my statement then.
We finally got it after all of these documents and forms and whatnot. And they delivered it to us. The only thing that doesn't work on it at the moment is the temperature gauge. The dealer, he noticed it when he was driving it down here, and said, "Yep, just bring it up to us one day when you're free, and we'll sort it out." With that, one thing I didn't realize that so obviously you need to fill these up with premium. I go to the gas station, and gas is obviously you Americans are extremely privileged in that regard. The price of the price per liter here is the price per gallon, especially for it adds about 40 cents to a gallon for premium. So it goes from $5 a gallon to about $5.40.
Ouch. Yeah.
I mean, that's not as bad as some places in the world for sure, right? I mean, that's pretty expensive though. Yeah.
Is that what you calculate as the per gallon value or the per liter?
Per gallon. So yeah, it's about 131 yen to the liter last time I checked, but that feels like about 540 to me in US.
Yeah, that's up there, I guess. Yeah, that's.
And this is for inline six. You know, it's supposed to be 220 horsepower. I mean, it's not a big engine, you know, but it's good enough for that. Yeah. But when I see people driving a giant Range Rover Escalade or something here, you have a sports car. Boy, man, think about what they're paying.
Yeah, yeah. And what about taxes and, what about registration fees and licensing and all that? Yeah. I assume that's just as complicated as everything else.
I mean, as far as taxes, so there's something called Shoken in Japan. It's basically your MOT tax, I guess.
Okay.
It depends on every car. Obviously, the bigger the engine, it's based on weight and the engine size, I think. And so obviously we have a lot of K cars here, which are very, very common. They're cheaper. They're only, what, a 600cc engine. So those are the shock in for that. You pay it for a new car, you have 3 years until your first shock in payment. And then after that, it's every 2 years. And this is just a tax, but we asked the dealer what's the average shock end for this car, and he'd say it's probably about $1,500 per 2 years.
Okay.
Every 2 years I'll have to pay, unfortunately, a shock end of about $1,500.
So that'd be about $750 a year if you're doing it every year.
In Colorado it's different here because it's sort of the opposite. The older your car is, the cheaper it is. But that's certainly not too, that's pretty close to what you'd pay for a car of that value, I would think, here, in Colorado to register every year, right? Or, every 2 years, the equivalent.
Yeah, if it was, yeah, I mean, I'd certainly think there's a lot of people with newer cars who are paying that or more.
RJ, isn't there some sort of just the way the system's sort of set up there that where older cars are effectively discouraged? I mean, they have become prohibitively expensive because of the taxes, or how does that work? They ship all the cars over to like Indonesia or whatever after 5 years. How does that work?
Well, I mean, obviously Japan's a big car manufacturer, so they have an incentive to try to get people into new cars. And so it does get more expensive for older cars, and there's different emissions standards. I'm not an expert on that, but if you do see somebody driving a car from the 60s or 70s, which you do see,
yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine what a shock in on those cost.
That's
an emissions test on them. So
making a statement. Yeah. And where's emissions testing? Right?
I think it's countrywide in Japan. I'm sure in America, I think
I never it, really,
state by state, city by city.
Yeah, or even like within, say, Colorado, you have to be on the Front Range. So basically Fort Collins down to Colorado Springs. Is that right, Doug? But anywhere else, you could pretty much get away with murder, and people do with, you know, rolling coal.
Well, yeah, it's funny that you mentioned this, because I just literally just was talking to my brother-in-law who just was telling me a story about his friend bought a 1989 Land Cruiser that he could not get to pass in Denver. So their mission this weekend, they got up at 6 a.m. They drove out to a rural part of Colorado in the mountains because they knew they could get it tested and passed up there. And
so you don't even have to register it there. You just have to take it there?
Apparently, yeah.
Wow.
I was kind of surprised to know too. I was like, does he have a house up there he can register it to? But I guess not. He's just going to get it registered. And then,
they don't have the facility, so they have to do it.
It's something like that. So it's like, yeah, so they, yeah.
America. You're about
to, So always around, way around something. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the Land Cruisers from the 90s here are just blowing up in popularity.
Yeah.
You see them all over the place. There's dealerships that specialize in just that era of Land Cruiser.
Huh.
And they're selling for $40,000.
Wow. Yeah, I would say that's easy. Pretty close here too, wouldn't you, Doug? I mean, depends on the era, right? But
yeah, I'm kind of a Land Cruiser guy. I had a 92 Land Cruiser. So that's the FJ80. It was an early FJ80 before the revised 6-cylinder engine. So it was kind of, you know, the rounded one, the one that you kind of see from the classic one from the 90s, but it's still
a good looking one.
I think it's still the best looking one.
Yeah.
I see some really gorgeous ones here in Denver. But it had the old engine block that had been, I think it had been derived from the FJ40s even. And it was definitely the one from the FJ62s, which were the boxier ones from the 80s. But, unfortunately, that thing couldn't really get out of its own way. It was so underpowered, but it was so well built. And I have a soft spot in my heart for old Land Cruisers. So, I love it. I love the FJ80s, FJ, and then the FZJ80s, which is ones that really came out after that. So. Mm.
Every time I cruise by that dealership, I always they're beautiful. They bring them.
Did you say every time I cruise past that dealership? Is that what you said?
it was previously on a bicycle.
Now from your lofty position.
Yeah.
But speaking of
a cigar, obviously in your mouth and just driving.
Doing as a Mercedes driver would do.
Well, there's a dealership not too far from my house. So there's a road very close to here that has just one after another exotic car dealerships, used car dealerships with just amazing cars inside, and one of them specializes in the W124 Mercedes, which is my era of car, and they restore these things to factory condition. These things are amazing, and they're priced at original MSRP prices,
but you know what?
And more.
You have an original. It's only original once. It sounds like yours. I mean, that's the move, right?
Yeah,
you can win the preservation class for your model.
We picked ours up for just around $11,000.
Really?
And which is about the going rate you see, but
maybe that'd be more here for sure.
Well, I think the ones that are in the States, because obviously people drive a lot more and longer, and you were using them as family haulers, that you find them with a quarter million miles on them.
Yeah.
And they've been used, you know, but here, this one was loved, you know, and I'm the third owner. The first owner had it till well over 100,000 miles or 100,000 kilometers. It's in good condition. I can't imagine paying $40,000 or $50,000, $60,000 for the same car that the dealership over here is charging for. I mean, they're beautiful. They obviously specialize in more the E500s because that's what everybody's raging about now. But I can't imagine spending that kind of dough for it.
Well,
yeah. I mean, what's that? Like, I'm drawing a blank on what's the model that's before the W124? Is that the
123?
Yeah. Yeah, who's that? There's that really well-known dealer, I think, in LA that does the same thing, right? Where he basically restores those things to like perfect condition, or he buys perfect ones. And he has like, I've heard them talk about them on a couple different podcasts.
And those are,
yeah. And
I those think are Yeah.
I think, I think that's, the peak on that model has already come and gone. And I think, I think as much things are, it's like, things move on. And now maybe the W124 is having its moment, as the next collectible. So, you may have yourself there.
You don't lose any money on that. Yeah.
I don't think you will. I mean, it's good to just drive it too and make sure you're kind of getting out there and let people see it. But, it's kind of neat to sort of be like on the upswing on those things,
You definitely see more of them. And my wife has been noticing it as well. She's like, yeah, boy, there really are a lot of these 124s out there. There's a ton of them. So
as we said, they're still well-built. They might've been sort of the last of sort of those wonderfully overbuilt, cars. So they're screwed together, right, as they say. So
they will never make them like that again. That's for sure.
Yeah. So why don't we do a quick little break and we'll go into our last segment here and, we'll be right back.
All right, we're back with the steering committee with our special guest, RJ Munt, live from Tokyo. Just off, I don't say off camera because I can see you, but off recording here, we were just talking a bit about sort of trends in cars in Japan and what you're seeing. I mean, I think Japan's often such a trendsetter. Like, what are the kids into these days over there? I mean, is it still all SUVs? What's a cool car other than a, 94 Mercedes wagon in Japan?
Well, obviously, we know that's the pinnacle, so we'll work our way down from there. So.
It is for me. I'm telling you, I would love to have one.
Yeah, the last time I was back in the States.
No worries, man.
Sorry.
He's excited.
He's our little guy. But last time I was back in the States, I went back to Iowa and Missouri. I was in the Midwest, and the sheer number of pickups and SUVs is off the charts.
Yeah.
But here, obviously, there's a lot of SUVs. You see, obviously, a lot of foreign stuff, but the CX-5 is everywhere. The Outlander is everywhere. Not a lot of Hondas.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. Every Toyota, but definitely CX-5s and CX-8s are everywhere. And but it's a lot more cars. There's a lot more K cars here.
Yeah.
It's a big city, and driving a giant SUV is not very practical. Gas is expensive. You do see a lot of G wagons here. Obviously, that's the popular name any big city. I as far as what's popular, what's kind of people are raving about, I mentioned this before, the new Suzuki Jimny is the hot new thing. That they just remodeled it, just released it. One of my colleagues just bought one. He had to wait about, I think he waited close to 9 months for it. He got it with a
GT3.
But he got it with a manual transmission.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. But those are kind of the hot new thing here.
No, it's all right. I'd heard that. I heard those. Yeah, those have like a very devout sort of cult following, or not cult. It's bigger than like a very popular. Yeah, like a small little SUV to drive. Yeah.
Yeah, and in Japan, people there's one thing. Once Japanese people really get into something, they really bond with, and there's a real community and camaraderie. It happens, but I think in America as well, of course, in the Porsche community. I don't know what the Mercedes station wagon from the 90s era communities like, but we'll see. But there's a, the Daihatsu Kopen has a massive following here.
Don't even know what that is.
Oh man, it's a little go-kart little thing.
I'm gonna look that up.
Daihatsu Kopen. I love the new ones. I'm not so crazy about, but the old ones that are a bit more round have
a little TT or something.
It's like that's what I was just gonna say.
It's mixed with the Thunderbird. One of those new retro Thunderbirds from the early 2000s.
You see these kind of communities all kind of getting together and having meets and so I think there's definitely a massive car culture here I notice a lot of old W124 Mercedes, so there's probably a scene for that I can get into but as far as brand new cars go, I mean I the Jimny is the biggest one that I really see, and I wonder in the States what are the new cars that.
Yeah.
Like, what's the modern day equivalent of what the Volkswagen Beetle was back in the day?
Yeah.
That from off the lot, it's got a cult following.
I'll put it this way, I have a nominee maybe for what's the new Beetle. It's not quite as popular as the Beetle, but I see a lot of, and they've sold a lot of them here in the United States, the Kia Soul. It's I think it's third generation now, but
yeah, they're very popular here. Yeah.
I mean, I think it struck me, and I kind of actually like it. I kind of, in a way where it's like, it's a very like, you know, reasonable, modest car, but it has some style to it. It's, you know, its shape and everything like that. But yeah, it's not an exact, apple to apple, but I see a lot of Kia Souls. And like I said, I think they're on the third generation and they still, I kind of like how it's evolved here in the United States in terms of the stock on it. So, but I don't know. What do you think, Ryan?
You mentioned the CX-5. I think the CX-5 is kind of, I mean, I've always liked the Mazdas, but they're a distant, like, you know, what, fourth place or something compared to, you know, the Hondas, the CRVs, the, our RAV4s, even Tiguans and things. I really like the Mazdas, but I think there's, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how well they're selling in the States. The Jimny would be a huge hit here, I think.
I'm sure in Colorado it would be massive. Yeah. I'm sure it would be. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Jalopnik's been big on the Jimny for a while.
There's a lot of Colorado specific cars, honestly. Like there's a lot of cars I feel like I see in Colorado that you don't see quite as frequent. I mean, like the,
like, you know, Volkswagen buses and like newer,
Synchros. I bet like 60-70% of the Synchros they're still running are in Colorado.
They sell more Tiguans in Colorado than any other place, any other market. Jeeps are hugely popular.
Here too, you know, of course, I think you go to any country in the world, it's just, you know, Harley Davidson and Jeep Wranglers are probably, no matter what country you're in, are going to have a massive following. Because that whole Americana, the lifestyle associated with those, but there's a Wrangler in my building that's a beautiful Jeep.
Good Jeeps in Japan.
They make a right-hand steering wheel in Japan. Those got a massive following. I'm a bit biased, right? I'm living my own bubble, but being in big cities, obviously more and more people aren't, the word on the street is that people aren't buying cars. Young people aren't into cars. They use public transport. Obviously there's the giant increase of car share services, which we love. We used it. It was fantastic. We have the Harrier that's parked down the street. We have a CX-5 that we can take anytime. Manufacturers know this and they're investing heavily into car share services themselves. They just know that young people aren't buying big cars. They're not buying cars in general, but they're not buying big cars. So you see more compact. That's, you know, you get a new series for all the makers that, you know, Volvo just released this XC40, the really small.
That's a funky little vehicle. So, I think that's a pretty cool car.
I see one of those, I think those things are really, I mean, I've said it before, I think Volvo has one of the best overall lineups.
Absolutely.
Design and style.
Absolutely. 100%.
The XC40, I recommend that anytime one of Kathleen's architect friends want a new car recommendation, I always say, look at the XC40. It's just a...
Yeah, that's architect-ish.
Or do we have the 40 or the 60? I know we have the
40 is the funkier one. The 61 is just sort of like a smaller 80.
There's a XC40 and a XC60 in my building, and the XC40 is definitely you can definitely tell what kind of audience that's kind of aimed at. But seems to be more and more popular.
What about let me ask you this, RJ, are you seeing any of the new Toyota Supras on the road?
That's a great question. Yeah, I just mixed it up with one for the first time. So.
I've seen a few. They're not as common yet. I drive there's one pulled in the gas station next to our house. They're not as, you don't see them. I don't know. I don't see very many. I don't know how they are in the States.
I've only personally seen one on the road. I don't do as much driving as Ryan does. So obviously Ryan's also seen one out on the road actually being driven, which is nice. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't think they're flying off the lots though. I'm a little concerned.
No, I think so too. And I obviously there was a whole connection with the BMW thing that it didn't maybe, yeah. it's not a true, like, you know, the purists that really love the old ones aren't going to buy this one. That so it's
although as it's been pointed out, no one, I mean, no one thought the old one was popular until they stopped making
it. Yeah.
And then I see it for $100,000 on BAT. So
and the new one's way faster than the old one.
Yeah.
RJ, what's for lunch? It's almost lunchtime there. What's for lunch?
I don't know. I have to figure it out.
Okay.
No, I was going to ask you. I know that I saw Ryan made a post for this on this, maybe on your personal page, but the new 4 Series, what do you think?
Oh, man, the Bucktooth Wonder. Really – so it's just the coupe where they're trying to pull that, right? Like
That's what they say,
I think it's – here's the thing. It is a – it's a pretty good looking car from almost every angle. And if it was any other brand, it wouldn't bother me. But as a BMW, it's a joke. It's absolutely hideous. It's just doing something to do something with that grill. There's no alignment with, I don't know. I think the history of, I mean, you just can't keep going big. You've all seen those mock-ups on Facebook where people say the next generation model and the grill is like extending up to the roof or whatever, you know, or the whole front end of the car is the grill, you know?
Yeah.
It didn't work for Lexus and it doesn't work for BMW. And, you know, and there's, of course, there's a whole discussion too about how most of the world, you know, what, 2/3 of the states in the United States, you have to have a front license plate. And you know how that changes the visual dynamics of that design. It's just boy, I think it's just horrendous. I think it's an abomination.
So I saw the first time I saw it, I had the same reaction, and then I've definitely come around to it, and I see that obviously there's certain brands that they've married themselves to this, to a certain look. The Alfa Romeo has the triangle, Saab had their grill, Volvo has their certain grill, and BMW obviously has the kidney grill. And through the years of BMW, they've had so many different evolutions or iterations of it.
Yeah.
And it's changed very drastically throughout various generations. And, and I feel like, this is just one more iteration of it that maybe we haven't gotten used to, obviously, with having all I see though is with all the photos and renderings I've seen only have a Euro EU number plate on it. So I'm really curious how it's going to work with a more square number plate, or like a US number plate, how it's going to look. But I don't know if you know the YouTube channel, the guy named called the Sketch Monkey. I've shared it with you, Ryan, maybe in the past, but he's a car designer and
I didn't know what it was called.
Originally Swedish, but lives in the States, and he really, really great stuff. He kind of reimagines older cars. So he'll what if they sold the E30 now? What if they redesigned the E30? He just did one for the Volvo 240, reimagining the Volvo 240, which is actually a really slick car. His redesign looks beautiful, but he gives a lot of history into it, and he talks about the new 4 Series and does a very mild facelift of it, and things are symmetrical after watching
it looks beautiful, doesn't it? I think they picked it up on Jalopnik, where basically they kind of everything else is the same, but they make the you know, they shorten it top to bottom, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful. It looks like a beautiful car.
Yeah. So his stuff is really good, but he talks about how they, unfortunately, or that's just what, that's the style of a BMW. That's their trademark is the kidney grill. And if that's what you're stuck with, you need to kind of evolve through the years as we need more air intakes in the front. And this is just the next iteration of it. And the new 7 Series looks a bit ridiculous with the giant. That's a bit too massive.
That might be less for some reason.
Really?
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, it looks too heavy for a sports car. For a big sedan, it doesn't bother me. But when's the last time BMW had a kidney grill that size? The 507 from the
15?
But, you know, I mean, BMW is like a lot of cars, Porsches, other things. I don't necessarily like them when they come out. And then I realized in 5 years that, oh yeah, that works. It was just sort of ahead of its time. And maybe that'll be the case. But it's just, It's going to take some.
It's interesting. I mean, it definitely is interesting too. I mean, I feel like BMW though, as a company in general, has always struggled with this, because I feel like they've gone through most of their history of just being like very plain looking cars, frankly. I mean, I feel like they have a long history of, like, you know, just sort of like fighting against like being very plain and boring. Like, nothing wrong with it, but nothing great either. And I feel like they've had these weird moments where they've decided to just like break out of that. You know, there's the obviously the infamous Chris Bangle era, which, you know, was really, you know, in stark contrast to sort of the immediate, you know, models they were all replacing. There was kind of like that, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, kind of really like simple but very handsome looking BMWs, and then they kind of got replaced by these very outlandish, you know, by BMW standard models. But and I kind of feel like they're sowing their oats again in that area with you know, taking some more, you know, chances. So I can see, I can tell that Ryan's laughing a little bit at my statements there. You froze up on me there. Are you still there? Okay.
But it's TBD. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, so how about this? How about, do you guys think now with a lot of time now on our hands, do you think the Chris Bangle designs have held up? You guys are both classically trained designers, and you know, your opinion is actually carries weight. So Ryan, you're a no on that.
Absolutely, worst chapter in BMW's history, especially the 7 Series. It's hideous. I'm not a fan of the Z4. Especially not a fan of that 5 Series. The interiors were terrible. The one car that gets a pass for me is the M Coupe version that they came out. So I thought the Z3 was pretty awful. Or was it the Z4, I guess? Then the Z4, for whatever reason, in the Imola red, that M Coupe looked pretty hot. I like that car. You can even get away with the wood inside, and it kind of works. But now, generally speaking, not my favorite era.
So they're still in the doghouse for you. Okay.
Yeah, you are, Jay?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm a big fan of the E36 and the 7 Series of that era. So late 90s, very early 2000s. But then after that, yeah, it started to the 7 Series when they had the facelift was
for me the E28 is my W124. Although I will say the W124 looks a lot more modern than the E28 in my eyes now, but I love that look, the E28. So that's, to me, sort of where it began and ended.
That's it. It's been all downhill since then.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And that's who grinds my gears. Yeah.
Don't get it. Yeah.
I am the oldest one on this call, so I can do that.
Yeah, that's right. You can be our resident old man, I guess.
That's right. That's for sure.
Fist shaker.
Yeah.
but
I almost did tell someone to get off my lawn today, so it's official.
Those damn kids.
That's right. Should we wrap this up? We're gonna waste your whole day here, RJ. It's been an hour and 40 minutes. We will do this again because you're a great guest.
Yeah, RJ, thank you. Always welcome back. We will set these up again. We will do this, even with time zones, we will make this happen again.
Yes, thank you very, very much. We're really just scratching the surface with you. You got a lot of car content in you. I know you do. So,
anytime.
Thank you very much. Yeah, of course.
Thank you, RJ. Thanks for being available. And you know, for my own sake, take a picture of that Land Cruiser dealership. I'd like to see that.
Okay.
Send it.
You could start a YouTube channel, honestly, and all the stuff we're talking about. You know, I mean, I don't think anyone else is really doing that. I would love to see this kind of stuff. In all your free time, RJ, you do that.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. This that concludes the steering committee.